Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And I'm Nico Bakulich.
And let's get biblical. If you have never listened to the podcast before, I'm the ex-Christian. I was raised Presbyterian. I'm now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew.
I'm reading the New International Version of the Bible, the NIV.
And I'm reading the NRSV, New Revised Standard Version, also. This is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
No, definitely not.
Sorry.
And this book in particular is pretty gory.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'll be upset by graphic violence, this may not be the episode for you.
No, it might not be the book for you either.
Yeah, the Bible in general may not be the book for you. So today we're talking about 2 Kings.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into it, we have a guest in the studio.
Yay. I'm here.
Nice.
His name is Garrett Conley. Am I saying it right?
You are.
Garrett Conley.
It's a confusing name.
His fiction and nonfiction can be found in The Common, The Madison Review, The Virginia Quarterly Review, and elsewhere. He's received scholarships from the Breadloaf, Sewanee. Is that how you say it, Sewanee?
Yeah, I think so.
And Elizabeth Kostova Foundation Writers Conferences. He currently teaches English literature and promotes LGBTQ equality in Sofia, Bulgaria. And I am reading this author bio off of the jacket of his book, which is called Boy Erased, and it's a memoir about going to quote-unquote ex-gay therapy, quotes around ex-gay and quotes around therapy.
Totally.
at age 19. So, Gary, do you want to tell us a little bit about your religious background?
Yeah, so my father's a missionary Baptist preacher, which if people know about missionary Baptists, they basically believe in a quote, unquote, literal interpretation of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I put quotes around that one because there's no way to have a literal interpretation of the Bible.
Yeah.
There are like so many contradictions, some of which are in 2 Kings as well. And yeah, so I grew up under that. And then when I was 19, I was outed to my parents. They consulted some of the church members that they knew, and everyone was like, you should send your son to ex-gay therapy at a place called Love in Action, which has all sorts of weird undertones.
Sure.
To that kind of name.
Sure.
And so it was like a 12-step program that was based off of Alcoholics Anonymous, and treated homosexuality as addiction. So that's my background.
So I have read the book, but I was surprised at how much it resonated with me. I'm straight. I've never been to any sort of like Christian therapy, but it really like struck a chord with me, the tension between like I want to believe and I want to be pure and I want to be good, but also like I want to read books and I want to write literature and I want to be able to talk about moral ambiguity and in a non-judgmental way. And that's like not compatible with this ultra pure form of Christianity.
Yeah. I mean, the Bible's full of great stories with a lot of nuance to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was shocking later when I would like reread the Bible after having read great literature and I would be like, oh, well, actually there are some gray areas here.
Yeah.
You know, and when you grow up thinking that there's only one book and one interpretation of that book, it can be a little stifling.
Yeah.
But now I kind of like it. Hmm. You know, I was reading 2 Kings and it was really violent and exciting.
And bizarre. I was like, yeah, gore.
Sort of.
Yeah. Well, speaking of 2 Kings, should we get started on it?
Yes,
totally.
All right. So
this book doesn't waste any time out of the gates.
No.
Oh my God. It's like cinematic, like, yeah, at the very beginning.
But to recap 1 Kings.
Okay.
Basically, what you need to know is that the kingdom split into two. So there's the northern kingdom, which is Israel, and the southern kingdom, which is Judah. And so then we've had a couple different kings for each kingdom. In particular, in Israel, we had the wicked king Ahab. He was wicked. He was killing prophets with his wife Jezebel, and just generally fucking up. And then we had some like more righteous guys in Judah. Also, there's this prophet Elijah, who's always in there bugging the king of Israel to get right with God. And
to limited effect.
Yeah. And this is all, we're going to start, it's around 850 BC.
Okay.
Just to put that in perspective.
But these people lived for like insane amounts of time.
Yeah, so. Well,
some
are
we
of
done
them
with
do.
That? I think we're done with
we're
that.
We're done with that. Well, we can extend life, which we'll get to. God can extend life.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
It's but,
and of course, the most information that we have is about the kings themselves and about how long they lived. And of course, that profession seems a little dangerous.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them don't live very long because they get assassinated.
It was a big deal when it was like 30 years. Like, oh, they were a good king.
So, first thing that happens in 2 Kings is the king of Israel, Ahaziah, falls through the lattice.
That was so good.
In his room. I'm not exactly sure what he was doing on top of the lattice.
Celebrating that he made it that far.
It's just like Jim fucking Carrey falls through the lattice.
He had never been up there. He was wondering what was up there all this time.
Yeah.
Spoiler, it was nothing.
And then you're just like, oh, I guess I'll go to Beelzebub. That's good.
Yeah, so that like he's injured, but he's not dead. And instead of consulting God, he sends his men to consult Beelzebub, a.k.a. Lord of the Flies. We've talked a bit on previous episodes about how the word Baal just means Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Lord of the Flies. And so the problem is he sends his guys to go consult with Beelzebub.
Mm-hmm.
But Elijah keeps, like, calling fire down from heaven and roasting them.
Yeah. You really aren't supposed to consult any outside sources in this book.
And
it's bad.
Elijah kills 102 people with this fire from heaven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then Ahaziah dies, and it's not precisely because he fell through the lattice. It's just kind of like because God wanted to punish him. But
yeah, he shouldn't have ever fallen through that lattice.
That just opened him up.
Really...
That was his first and fatal mistake.
His first and last mistake. So now we have Joram.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And I think we still have Jehoshaphat in Judah right now.
Something like that, yeah. The way it follows the two kingdoms is very confusing because
it
will go down
in
one line in Judah and then it will jump back in time and go down another
line.
There's no
line like chapter break.
2 Kings chapter 2, we get Elijah's Assumption.
Oh my God, it's so good.
It's a very famous Bible story if you grew up going to church.
Okay.
You hear this one a lot.
I like to think of this as two confusingly named buddies hanging out.
Yeah.
Oh my
this
God,
is Elijah with a J and Elisha. With an SH.
Yes.
Yeah.
His,
hanging
his,
out.
Like assistant.
Mm-hmm.
He just picked the guy who was closest to him in name.
That is exactly what I thought.
Turns out to be pretty kick ass, though.
Yeah,
that's
good
true.
Assistant.
It was a good move.
Yeah.
Something that's weird about this story is that, like, everyone knows that he's about to get taken up into heaven.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
And they keep being like, hey, Elisha, like, you know, your boss is going to get taken up to heaven today. And he's like, yeah, can we not talk about this? It's kind of a sensitive subject.
But then he still has to ask for that double portion.
Yeah, he's like, give me a double portion of your soul.
Of your soul.
Well, so here's what that is. Apparently, according to my Bible's footnotes.
Okay.
Okay.
The eldest son of a family gets a double portion of the inheritance.
Mm.
And so he was basically saying, like, I want to take over what you're doing. I want to, like, do the same thing you're doing. Like an eldest son would take responsibility for like his father's land and business.
And we have that beautiful image of Elisha putting on Elijah's clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're not there yet.
Oh, sorry. I'm moving
Spoilers.
Ahead. Sorry.
First, we have to go across the Jordan. Like he keeps, so Elijah's like moving and he keeps being like, you stay here because I'm just going to get like taken up to heaven.
And you don't want to get caught in the whirlwind that will call me up
to
heaven.
Too much.
And but Elisha is kind of like in Ruth and Naomi. He's like, no, I'm staying with you. Mm-hmm. So they keep going on. He keeps saying this. People keep telling Elijah that Elijah's about to leave, and mm-hmm. he keeps saying, don't talk about it. They reach the Jordan, and Elijah takes his cloak and slaps the water with it, and it parts.
Thereby connecting him with all of the previous holy dudes that have done that many times.
Particularly Moses and Joshua
have
both parted water.
Which this is just a show off, right? There's no reason. Like, they could have taken a barge or whatever.
Yeah. No, there's... I mean, well, it probably would have been slower to take a barge.
It would have taken longer. And we don't know when that ascension was going to happen.
Oh, you think he was behind schedule?
Yeah, maybe it's like,
the next barge isn't for an hour. There's no way I'm going to make it to my own ascension.
Is there like a scheduled like time and spot?
It's like counting down 10 minutes, 9 minutes, and then it goes back to 30, and you're like, oh! so they cross the Jordan, and then Elijah says, like, what can I do for you before I go? And he says, I want a double portion. I want to inherit your ministry. And then, bam, down come the chariots of fire, drawn by fiery horses. There's a whirlwind. And Elijah gets just blown up into the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the movie version of that would cost like half the budget.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And
I guess it blows his clothes off, right?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't need those where he's going.
Yeah, no more clothes.
He's going to need a bigger boat. Where he's going.
And it's like...
I may have misunderstood the story.
This isn't the novelization of Jaws. This is kind of... It's interesting because there's like fiery chariots and horses in lots of like Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see the influence of that here, because that's not something we've seen before at all in the Bible.
Is it the first fiery chariot?
I think so.
I think it might be. Also, not a lot of people have been like sucked up to heaven in a storm.
Yeah.
If any.
Nobody has.
People usually just die regular style.
Yeah, even like Moses died on the top of Mount Horeb. Yeah. And,
do you get like special status if that happens to you?
I mean, I assume that the answer is hell yeah.
Yeah,
it seems like extremely. It.
But aren't there... that's someone else's bones later. So he doesn't even leave a body behind.
No, he leaves no body. And in fact... He's got the power now. You can tell because he can part the Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, yeah, Elijah got taken up. And they're like, are you sure? Like, we can send some guys out to look for his body.
I didn't get that at all.
I didn't either.
And he's like, well, I'm pretty sure you're not going to find him.
And they basically, like, browbeat him into sending out a search party.
Yeah,
like, why wouldn't they believe him?
It says, like, he's too awkward to say no after a while. So he's like, yeah, go ahead if you want.
And then they come back after 3 days of searching. Like, we didn't find anybody. He's like, yeah, I knew.
Well, yeah, he did go up to heaven in a chariot of fire.
Well, he was new at the job. You know, like, he probably felt like, I need to be nice to everybody.
That's right. It's first day. You don't want to make
any later.
Yeah, you don't want to make any enemies on your first day.
That's true. So... Now Elisha is God's main man. Mm-hmm. He's the big prophet on the block.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to prove that, he's got to wander the earth and...
Did you say the earth?
Do things.
Did I? You'll never know.
Wander the Smurf.
and help people out, like, in little ways and big ways. Mostly big ways.
Well, before he helps people out, though...
Okay.
Some youth begin to mock him.
This is the moment.
The most important story in this book.
And the youth say, go on up, you bald head. Shout out to our listener, Brandon, who quoted this when we were reading 2 Samuel. And I pretended to get the reference because I was like, I don't remember that part. But here it is now. He was a couple books early. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I get that bald head. I get how that's an insult.
Mm-hmm.
I don't exactly get the go up part. Where are they telling him to go up to? Heaven?
Like, just go up.
Just
get out. Get out of here.
It's,
go up.
You wouldn't understand it. It's street talk.
Yeah, just go up on out of here.
You're right.
It's like a southern thing, too.
Oh, is it really?
No, I don't know.
Oh.
Nice.
I just do that whenever I don't know what something is.
Good.
People believe me.
She'll fall for it every time.
Yeah, I will. I'm very gullible when people like say something with a straight face.
Yeah, going up over there.
Especially because, I mean, there's lots of...
There are lots of weird southernisms.
Weird southern sayings. Yeah. I'm from California.
Let's not alienate any of our delightful...
No, I mean, they're great. I mean, my grandparents are from Alabama and Mississippi, so I heard some of these.
Oh, so it's okay for you.
Yeah. Some of my best friends are Southern. Yeah.
My book's very nuanced about the South. Some weird stuff's going on right now.
So anyway, these hateful street smart youth 40, are mocking 42 our man
of them?
Elijah. That, well, at least 42.
At least.
Yeah.
Because then what Elijah does is calls on some bears.
Yeah.
And the bears just come out and maul all these dudes.
Yeah.
42 of them are killed.
Mine says she bears.
Yeah, they are definitely she
bears.
That's
important to me. I feel like we need to get this.
There are few enough female characters that like we got to take them where we can get them.
It's like a maternal, you know, like maternal bear kills all the children. It's just
well, everyone knows a she bear is more dangerous than a he bear.
Well, I mean, that's true. When
you got to protect those kids. Yeah. But now they're not protecting the kids anymore. Pretty scary.
I mean, maybe the kids that they're protecting are
their own.
They deserve to die.
Dignity of Elisha. I don't know. That's the thing that they're protecting.
Yeah.
This is I think a great use of prophetic power. Like, there's a lot of issues going on. People are worshiping Baal. There's like wars, but I think what we really need to focus on is uppity kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it gets their attention. It's like, this guy just came to town. Like, he's the real deal.
He's done with this. I'm not making enemies on the first day. Now he's like, you got to win a fight on your first day.
That's right.
He picks his fight against these kids. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
I just love to think of the idea of this being quoted in like a biblical interpretation of the law and be like, did not youths go up to Elijah and say, go on up, you bald head? And did not she-bears come from the woods and eat them? You know.
Therefore, so should we.
The state rests, Your Honor. You know?
So we've got Joram in Israel. We've got Jehoshaphat in Judah.
In Judah.
And they're going to team up with the king of Edom to quell a rebellion in Moab. So they're out there fighting on the battlefield. They run out of water. And so they call on Elisha, who, instead of like striking a rock or whatever, he tells them to dig ditches. And then water comes up and fills the ditches.
Fills the wadis.
Oh, does yours say wadis?
It does.
Oh,
wadis.
Ditches full of water. I like the quote that Elisha says, "This is an easy thing in the eyes of the Lord. He will also hand Moab over to you." Oh, yeah, you think this is hard? This is no problem. Not only is he going to give you water, he's going to hand Moab over to you.
He's a real showman, this Elijah.
Yeah, not without fanfare.
And then the Moabites, who they're fighting against, see the ditches full of water, but they see it as blood. And they assume that the coalition of armies that they're fighting against must have turned on each other. And that's why there's all this blood everywhere.
Hmm.
So they're like, well, now would be a great time to attack. And they run in to attack. But unfortunately, they're actually outnumbered. And the Israelites are all ready for them. And the Moabites get slaughtered.
Easy. Chalk one up for God.
Yeah. No problem. Then we're going to see Elisha just wander around performing miracles for a couple chapters.
Let's not forget that the king of Moab, like, sacrifices his own son.
Oh, he did.
Because I thought that was really weird.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's like, everyone's dead. Maybe if I just sacrifice my son, something great will happen.
Classic rookie mistake.
Yeah.
Classic pagan mistake.
It is. That happens a lot here.
Although,
Second King.
It did have.
Also, the Jews did that at one point.
Yeah, we did have the Israelites, sacrificing a son a couple books ago. But,
we're over
or a daughter.
That now.
Well, we thought we were over it.
We thought we were over it. There was the Binding of Isaac, and then later somebody else did it, too.
Yeah, okay, this guy in, like, Judges or something.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. For now, we're over it.
Yeah. We're pretending that we're better than that. So Elisha, he has another... His next miracle is, like, very similar to the one that Elijah performed.
A lot of his magic is container-based.
Container-based magic.
He's a prop guy. That's what he works with.
He's a prop magician.
Mm-hmm.
Even the ditches were containers.
A little bit, yeah. They're like the earth's containers.
Yeah.
So like this woman, her husband died and left them all in debt. And whoever he owed money to is going to collect by taking their sons as slaves. So in order to prevent that, Elisha says, you know, like,
What do you got?
Fill up a bunch of jugs with, you know, the tiny bit of oil that you have. And she's like, there's only a tiny bit. And he's like, no, just keep pouring it into jugs and it'll keep pouring. And then she can sell that oil. I guess oil is like very valuable.
Yeah. Valuable and delicious.
You think like jugs of oil versus like slaves? You'd think the slaves would be like a lot more expensive.
I guess
expensive.
It depends on the type of slave, maybe.
The type of oil,
true.
Too.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, did people just have a ton of jugs around?
Well, she has to go around her neighbors.
Yeah, I thought she was, but they like gave it to her. I guess
did
it was
people
alone.
Have a ton of jugs around?
It was like,
I think they did.
It's like
I think
a Tupperware
containers
party,
were
you know?
The thing. Like that, just everyone had containers everywhere. Just in case.
Call it the container age, sure.
Just in case Elijah was going to be coming
that's
by.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah, and
if you know he's out
case,
there.
Like he might show up and you'll get tons of oil. It'll be great.
It's like endless breadsticks.
Yeah.
Bottomless
oil.
Breadsticks? What are you, infinite
Wait,
breadsticks?
Olive Garden? Oh my God, so many connections right now.
The next thing he does is he rewards this woman's hospitality by letting her get pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Even though she's too old.
Although, mine says her husband is too old.
I know, that was weird.
It's like the first time, we've had a lot of women who can't get pregnant, but this is the first time that it's made to seem like it's the husband's fault. Quote unquote.
So that's
it's nobody's
like,
fault when infertility happens.
Yeah, it's like impotence.
Do not at me. I didn't mean that.
Yeah. Didn't it seem like maybe she didn't really want the child? Like she's like, but I'm too old.
I think
he's
it's
too old.
I think it's more like Elisha has like two tricks to do. And it's like, if it's like, I can make you oil or I can make you pregnant. It's like, which one would you prefer? And she's like, well, I got plenty of oil. So,
yeah. Well, she says like, don't get my hopes up.
Right.
You know, she's like, don't, if you're going to say that you're going to do this, like, don't lie to me because I don't want to get my hopes up.
Foreshadowing.
And so then she does have the son, but then when he's young, he dies.
Mm-hmm. Of a head
thing. Why. A head thing?
A head thing?
A head thing.
That's your diagnosis?
I just wrote down these notes like really sloppily on the plane.
Oh, okay.
And it was like, he gets a headache and mysteriously dies.
Oh, yeah. He says, yeah, he's like, my head
my
hurts.
My head.
But then Elisha brings him back to life.
Well, can we talk about how he does that?
Yes.
That's weird.
Because it's the exact same way that Elijah did it in the last book.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And it's weird.
Lining up the hands,
yeah.
The
but
feet.
Confusingly as well for me, before he does the right thing to bring the kid back, he like tries it a couple of different ways. First of all, he sends a delegate. He sends some unnamed like intern to go
well,
bring this guy.
He's too fancy now.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. He's like, here's my staff. Don't let anyone touch the staff and lay the staff on the kid.
Yeah.
And the intern takes the staff, puts the staff on the kid, nothing happens. And the intern has to come back. How awkward would that be?
That would be really awkward.
Like, I'm here from Elisha.
And probably
I brought his staff.
Elisha is just like the she-bears are waiting if you miss
him. He's got him. He's got she-bears on speed dial.
Yeah.
But and then he tries something else that doesn't work. He like tries to kiss the kid and breathe life back into him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then Classic. He settles on the
stretching out on top of him and aligning like our
body
hands,
parts.
Our feet, yeah, and then.
Which I was thinking, like, is that, I don't know, hands, feet, and head are just, like, so important for the Bible. Here.
Yeah.
I
mean,
well, they're pretty important.
Yeah, they are really
humans.
Important. The appendages and then the head. Like, it makes sense, but it was like, oh, that's, like, Jesus stuff later. You know, it just seems like there's a tradition of talking about those separately.
Yeah.
And together.
So. Yeah, brings him back. Everyone's psyched.
It's kind of interesting.
So the next miracle is death in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure what that means.
A little bit of that tasty gourd stew.
They like make up a little
gourd
stew.
They got the wrong gourd.
And then they're like, oh, it's moldy or something. There's death in the pot.
Yeah.
That was confusing.
That is the most overblown reaction to like a bad stew of all time. Like, somebody makes a stew out of gourds.
It's
and
like
the
Bill
like,
over here made this awful stew. It's like death eating it.
No, there's death in the pot. So I was just like, it's okay. It's okay. He puts he fixes it by putting a little flour in the stew.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
flour goes a long
it'll
way.
Thicken
in this
it up
book.
A little bit.
So what else do we have? Oh, he makes an axe head float.
Oh, I loved that part.
They're like
such a strange solution for
building.
This
well, they're building like a new headquarters for the profit company.
Yeah, I thought it was really sweet. The guy that loses the axe head, he's like, but I borrowed it.
Yeah, he drops it in the river and he's like, I borrowed it. I love that.
It's such a genuine human moment.
Yeah.
You know, to be like, oh, fuck.
And it's tender almost.
Yeah, it's like if I lost my own axe, I'd be like, man, I'm such an idiot. But like, that was my fault.
Yeah.
If you lose someone else's, it's like, oh, I've betrayed a friendship now.
Yeah.
So then Elisha makes it float and they get it back.
Doesn't he put a stick in the water and then it like floats up? Mm-hmm.
Floats up to the stick.
Weird image.
Then we have an attack from the Aramaeans, and then Elisha has God blind them.
What he says in my book is, strike this people, please, with blindness.
God's like, thanks for making that specific request. You know, you're communicating clearly what you want. I got you. They bring them all to Samaria, and they're like, hey, we could have killed you, but we didn't. And then they leave.
And that's somehow scarier. It's like, well, we just blinded you temporarily.
True, that's what David did to Saul. Was it what he said, I could have killed you, but I didn't.
Yeah, whatever. Connections.
Which, like...
Hashtag.
In this world, I guess it kind of works sometimes, but Game of Thrones, you don't do that kind of stuff.
Right.
No.
But they attack again later on. Again, I'm not really sure.
Just kill them.
And this time they're a lot more successful for whatever reason. And they have the city of Samaria on lockdown. And so no one can go in or out of Samaria, and they can't get any food in. And so they're all starving. And to give you an example of just how precious food is, mm-hmm. It says a donkey head sold for 80 shekels of silver.
Wow. 80 shekels for a donkey head?
Way more than I'm used to paying for a donkey head.
Mm-hmm.
Things are desperate. In fact, they're so desperate that these two women make a fun deal with each other that in order not to starve, they will eat the son of one of them.
The first day.
The first day. And then the next day, they'll eat the other one's
son. You gotta eat a kid a day?
Why do they need all of a kid? They should be able to stretch out one kid.
Well, they don't have refrigeration, remember.
In one day.
Oh, that's true.
But they could like salt it and
cure it. Are they going to feed a lot of people with that
Maybe.
One child?
Maybe they're feeding like the whole family.
Well, not the child.
No.
And so one of them, they eat one son.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they drew straws for that? Like which son's going to go first?
She doesn't make it clear. And the one who's telling the story makes it sound like she kind of got duped into
it.
Yeah, I'll bet the other one was just like, you go first because...
That's exactly what happens.
Will totally boil my son.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The next day.
Because then the next day she hides her son, and the first woman is not too happy about
it.
She's complaining to the king, like, "We already ate my son, and now it's time to eat her son. And where are they?"
And the king fucking flips out. Yeah. Like he's like, "This is fucked. Like I fucked up. Like we need to change what's going on here."
The mere fact that we're having this conversation,
he's tearing his robes.
Everyone's always tearing their robes, though. It was like, oh, just everything is horrible now.
Like, this is bad. Like, I did not realize.
Like, there's no point.
What we were getting into.
He's like, what have I been doing for these last few months? You know, like, I didn't even realize.
In anything.
But he kind of, like, blames it on Elisha for some reason.
Because he let the
Aramaeans
go.
Them.
Yeah.
Because he didn't kill him when he had a chance.
Well, I mean, he kind of has a point. Why didn't they kill him? If they're just going to attack again, he's out there like having mercy on them. And then meanwhile, back at home, we're eating our own kids.
That's a good point. And usually that would be the point where like God steps in and is like, yo, treat your enemies with kindness and you're A-OK by me. But in this case, it wasn't the right thing to do, apparently.
Is there any actual judgment, though, that we can like parse out here?
I don't know, because Elisha is said to be like, Elisha's in the right.
Yeah, Elisha's always right, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... Anyway, we have four lepers who decide to give themselves up to the Aramaeans because they're like, we're going to starve here anyway. Maybe they'll like have mercy on us. And if they kill us, well, we were going to die anyway. So they head over toward the Aramaean camp, but God makes the Aramaeans think that it's like a huge army coming at them.
Mm-hmm.
And they all flee and they just leave like their horses tied up. Their tents are still up. And they just run. So as soon as this camp flees, I mean, at first they think it's a trick and they go to check it out and they see just like all the horses tied up and everything. And then they realize it's not a trick. So they're like, hurrah, the food prices go down. But still, like, it causes like a stampede of people to buy food, and they trample a man to death.
The captain that was like saying, I don't know if that's really going to happen. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Was
yeah.
He wasn't really faithful.
Like, yeah, because he was the guy sent to kill Elisha. And Elisha says, hey, tell your king food will be cheap tomorrow. And the guy was like, I can't tell my king that. He's going to kill me because that's bullshit. And he gets trampled to death for questioning Elisha. Yeah.
He shouldn't have done that.
Black Friday at Walmart style. Like, just everybody rushes over and tramples him.
There were already dead bodies strewn everywhere.
And there's already dead bodies. Well, if they haven't been eaten.
Yeah.
I think...
Cheery stuff today.
I know.
Jesus.
I think that it's supposed to be like the king was bad. They're worshiping false gods, and this is their punishment. Their punishment is... I mean, God has threatened to make people eat their children multiple times before this, so...
Yeah, he lays it out earlier. He's like, if you don't follow my laws, here's what's going to happen. There'll be famine for 700 years, and you'll end up eating your kids. So he...
And let's not forget generational sin, which, you know, like, plays a larger role sometimes.
Yeah, although it's in this book that starts to, like, loosen up.
Yeah. Mm.
Where we get some instances of God saying, well, you're good, so I'll spare you. And this all will happen after you die.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Elisha goes to Damascus, and the king, Ben-Hadad, sends his servant, Hazael, to ask Elisha if he, Ben-Hadad, will recover from the illness that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And Elisha says, tell him that he will, but actually he won't. And you're going to become king.
And doesn't he cry?
He starts crying because he has a vision of all the stuff that Hazael, as king of Aram, is going to do
to the Israelites.
To the Israelites.
Is that the part where, like, we learn that, you know, women will be, like, cut open and stuff?
Yes. He will rip open the pregnant.
Yeah, they introduce that little trope in this book and use it a couple times.
It's like a flash forward into that. Like, babies will be ripped out.
Yep. And so then Hazael goes back and, like, waterboards Ben-Hadad to death. He like suffocates him with like a
wet
cloth.
Bed sheets?
Yeah.
Bed sheets.
I don't know why it has to be wet if he's just suffocating him.
It makes it really creepy.
It does make it really creepy.
It's like he's slowly, like, I can just imagine him slowly dipping in the water. He's like coming out and just being like, okay.
Bedtime.
Yeah. Go to sleep and
So then we have like a few, we go through a few kings in both kingdoms.
We start a long stretch of kings popping up.
I tried for a while.
For a while as well.
It's very confusing because there's like two kings named Ahaziah, one in Israel, one in Judah.
That are separated in time.
And basically what's important is that Elisha designates this guy Jehu to be king. King of Israel, even though his lineage is from Judah, I think. But I could be wrong. So we will hear about Jehu when we come back from a short break.
Yeah, we're going to listen to some music, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
Bye. Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. We are talking Second Kings.
Second Kings. I'm Lauren.
I'm Nico.
I'm Garrod.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Sorry. I stepped on your line. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'm Garrod. Hi.
Garrod's our guest today.
Special guest.
And just to remind you, he has a new memoir out. It's called Boy Erased. It's about being sent to ex-gay therapy, and it's really good. You should buy 10 or 12 copies of it.
A numerologically significant number of copies.
Yeah, probably. By 7 or 12 or 40.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, when we left off, we had just found a new king for Israel.
Mm-hmm. Elisha had found him. Yeah. We didn't do anything.
And his name is Jehu. He is now charged with the task of taking the throne from Joram. So, Joram is in Jezreel, a city called Jezreel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like recovering from some wounds that he sustained in battle against Aram. And Jehu takes his troops and rides up to Jezreel. And so they see someone from their, you know, like lookout tower. They see someone approaching. And Jerom sends a messenger to see if this approacher comes in peace.
Approacher?
Sure.
Yeah. You know, the one who approaches.
If the approachment is peaceful.
I am the one who approaches. And the first messenger goes out there and they can see him meet the approacher, but he doesn't come back. So they send out a second messenger. The second messenger doesn't come back either. But the lookout guy says, you know, I think I recognize this guy's driving, because this is Jehu.
And it's really fast.
He drives like a madman, is how my Bible says it.
Mine says maniac.
Because he's approaching in his chariot. So it's good to know that there have always been people who drive like madmen, like long before cars.
As soon as you could drive something poorly.
Yeah. So Jerom goes out to see what's up, and Jehu shoots him through the heart with an arrow.
In the back of the heart, is what mine said.
Oh, the back of the heart.
Yeah, something like that.
That's the most important part.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
It's tender.
And Ahaziah, the king of Judah, is also there because they're both fighting against Aram together.
Mm-hmm.
So Ahaziah gets in his chariot to flee, but Jehu's dudes follow and kill him as well. Now we have Jezebel, who is Jerom's mother.
Okay.
Because Jerom is Ahab's son.
Right.
So Jezebel is, you know, she's just like older now. Mm-hmm. Her son is king instead of her husband.
Aren't we all, though?
We are all getting older every day.
She's painting her eyes more these days.
Oh, yeah. That's what I hear. She painted her eyes, arranged her hair, and looked out of a window.
That was so good.
It's like, you know, just because you feel bad doesn't mean you have to look bad. Life is ugly. You don't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that she's looking out a window. So then Jehu like marches up the stairs and she's like, oh, I didn't see you there. I was just looking out the window.
Just painting my eyes.
You're not mad at me, are you?
Spoilers, he is.
Spoiler, he's mad. Also, she calls him, she's like, oh, hi, Zimri.
Oh,
which
shit.
Is like apparently a sick burn. We like read about Zimri, but it was like one sentence and I don't remember.
Zimri was one of the crappy kings from Kings 1, aka First Kings.
Yeah.
Burn.
So, then...
Look at this Zimri over here. What a schmuck.
Jehu then says, like, to the eunuchs that are standing around, because, you know, you gotta have some eunuchs in every court. He's like, which of you are on my side? And like some of them like raise their hands, I guess, and he's like, throw her out the window. So they do. I think if you're gonna throw someone out the window, you should do it yourself.
Yeah.
I don't think like the eunuchs have it hard enough already. Like you shouldn't make them also kill people.
I don't think
they don't have it hard. I think
You are being very harsh to eunuchs right now.
They've been through enough. Someone can get really upset and send a bunch of messages like about how they're eunuchs.
And like remember in Judges when Gideon was going to make his son kill those two like kings that he'd captured and they were like, be a man and do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And he did. I think
someone needs to have a word with Joram here about
Jehu.
Joram's
dead.
Yeah. About his defenestration style.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, do these eunuchs have good like workout routines like that would really enable them to lift her out the window?
Yeah. Like why did Jehu wasn't strong enough to do it? Maybe I mean, I don't know what the eunuchs are doing all day. Maybe
I'm keeping my mouth shut. I'm not going to make any more eunuch jokes.
You shouldn't. We're going to become that eunuch-hating podcast.
we're going to get a lot of messages from indie activists after this.
Yep.
Okay. So they throw her out the window. Horses trample her. Her blood spatters the
walls.
Mm-hmm. It, you know, it says that explicitly. You can't just assume. It's like, no, her blood's spattered. Yeah, like, you can be sure. This was fucked up. Don't worry. And when he sends some guys to go bury her, reluctantly, like begrudgingly, but he's like, well, I guess she was a queen, so I guess we have to bury her. All they find is her hand, her feet, and her head.
Exactly.
Just like Garrett was saying earlier.
The three most important body parts.
Well, actually, it says her skull.
Oh, that's true.
What?
The five most important body parts.
The three most important categories of body parts.
Heads, hands, and feet.
And it says, actually, that it's just her skull.
Yeah.
Which I guess has already been
the meat spinning.
Well, that's the point. To fulfill the prophecy, the dogs have to eat her up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got that prophecy from Elijah in the last book, but we didn't see it happen. And we were kind of psyched about that last book. We were like, hey, Jezebel made it through, you know, but she didn't. She gets eaten by dogs. Then Jehu and his men just pretty much like kill everyone who is like related to Joram and Ahab and everybody who's loyal to them.
Systematic murdering.
I find it confusing too, because later on they go on to specifically quote a passage that's like, the son shall not be killed for the father and the father shall not be killed for the son. That everyone shall be killed for their own crimes.
Well, Joram was also wicked though.
I understand that, but like, why do they got to kill his whole family and all his extended relatives?
That was a loophole.
Just a little holdover from,
I mean, because you got to do it or whatever.
For tradition's sake.
All right. And I guess it's not clear yet that Jehu is like following the word of the law perfectly. Yeah. So it's understandable if he would make some mistakes.
Also, we don't know. They could have been worshiping idols too.
Well, some of them were, right? Baal was still a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, in that case, if they all sin, then I guess they all get to die.
They get to die.
Yeah. So they pile their heads up by the city gates,
mm-hmm.
as you do. Oh, yeah. And then here,
pyramid style? Cube style?
I assume pyramid.
Okay. It's natural.
What do you think? How would you pile heads?
Pyramid all the way, baby.
Pyramid all the way?
Would do like a circle.
Are they in a container, I wonder? Are they in a basket?
Head baskets?
Heads are containers.
Oh.
Good point. We got
they
a smart
contain
one over here.
The most important thing of all, hair.
Sinus cavities.
Sinus cavities. Okay. They don't contain hair. That would be fucked up. Anyway.
They don't contain hair?
What are we doing, man?
Okay. Look. We have gotten way off track here.
Okay, we
need
go.
To pay a lot of respect to the word of the Lord.
Your brain is actually made out of hair.
This is disgusting.
Maybe mine is. Okay. They come across some relatives of Ahaziah, and Jehu says, take them alive. And it's like, so they took them alive, and then they slaughtered them. And I was like,
it's like, take them alive, and then take them to the killing
pits. I think that we need to reexamine our definition of taking them alive. And then they call all Baal's prophets together, and they're like, hey.
Oh, my God.
That's great.
That
we're
good.
Huge fans of Baal. We're going to just like throw this whole like party for him.
Do little sacrifices over here.
Everybody come over. It's going to be a great time.
And if you don't come over, you'll die.
And then they kill them all.
Yeah.
And then they turn it into a pissing spot.
They turn it into a latrine. They burn down the Temple of Baal, and it's a latrine even to this day, the Bible says.
Oh, my God.
The narrator's day.
God's loving it.
No doubt.
He's like, yeah, use that latrine.
He's popping some corn sitting back. Yeah, use that latrine.
But Jehu,
filthy.
But Jehu, despite all of his righteous slaughter, will not get rid of like the golden calves.
Yeah, he stops Baal worship. He doesn't take down the high places yet.
No, nope. It's really rare for the high places to be taken down.
Yeah, the high places are very persistent. And so God punishes Israel for this by letting Hazael, the guy who waterboarded the king to death, take a bunch of their land for Aram. So that all is happening in Israel. And then we have, meanwhile, back in Judah, Ahaziah. So yeah, Ahaziah got killed by Jehu. So his mom takes over for a bit.
Athaliah?
Yeah,
something like that.
And we have the next king is Joash, who like gets hidden away from her slaughter by like his sister or something.
She gets mad and she tears her clothes. And then the soldiers kill her.
Yeah.
Outside where some horses are. That's written down.
The horses seem to be like good
women slaughtering.
Good like
territory.
Tramplers, yeah. Women tramplers.
Well, they breed them. They breed them to be good tramplers.
To be women tramplers.
His father was a trampler. His mother was a trampler. And like, so then Joash grows up. He takes the throne at age 7.
I think is like always a good sign.
Repairs the temple. Oh, if
like
you make it.
Baby king is almost always a good king.
Because he's not the one in control.
They're just little.
He's like paying all this tribute to Hazael. And then we just, we go through like a few more kings, whatever. They are always getting assassinated and shit. And like every time they die, it's like, and as for the rest of his deeds, are they not recorded in the Book of Kings?
Which is a very passive aggressive way to say that. I've always read it like, aren't they
Shouldn't you know this by now?
Aren't they recorded in the annals of the Book of Kings?
Yeah.
What are you asking me for? Just go look it up.
Yeah, just look it up.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out that this is where the name Salad really started to like destroy my brain. Like the beginning of 14 is in the second year of King Joash, son of Joahaz of Israel, King Amaziah, son of Joash of Judah, began to reign.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
None of that. It just turns into nonsense. I can keep track of like a couple weird names at once, but then.
Yeah.
And all the
so
J names and stuff.
Don't bother trying to keep track of it.
Okay.
Basically, the next king is Jehoash, not Joash.
that was so confusing.
There we have Elisha is getting old and he's going to die soon. Before he dies, Jehoash pays him a visit and Elisha has him like shoot an arrow out the window.
And wasn't he like sort of holding the arrow behind him?
Yeah, something.
It was like a romantic.
Yeah,
it was like, let me help you.
It was like they were on the Titanic, you know, it's just like,
let me help you.
We're kings of the world.
Yeah.
And they shoot the arrow and like based on where it lands, he says that Jehoash will defeat Aram.
Mm-hmm. It's an arrow of victory.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has him shoot arrows at the ground or strike
the
ground.
Them.
And he does it 3 times, and he's like, oh, you should have done it 5 times.
What? You just made up this game. How do I know
that? Like,
he's making up
the
rules as he goes. It's like, well, that means you're going to not have as many battles
yeah.
that are successful.
It means you're going to have victory 3 times. If you'd done it 5 times, you would have been good to go. But
you know, I just want to say, before we move on, windows are really important in this book. There's like, you know, the window that we have Jezebel thrown out mm-hmm. of, and we have this window thing. And then at one point, they're like, well, if God could just open up windows out of heaven and mm-hmm. send food, then mm-hmm. it'd be great. I just feel like there's such an attention to Windows.
Little known fact, this is where Bill Gates got the idea to yeah. name his software Windows. He was like, Jezebel, that bitch, I'm naming this shit Windows.
That makes sense.
I can see no logical errors with that explanation.
Illuminati something.
Well, Windows are, they're about the liminal space between the spiritual
exactly.
and the physical worlds. Oh. It's a barrier, of course,
to
the soul.
Say, eyes are the window to the soul.
Yeah.
And
where are eyes again? In the head.
Sorry,
in the head.
Which is a container.
I got us all off track again. Let's keep moving.
No.
He's like still.
No, we're stuck on this for the rest of the episode.
Is Jehoash still like banging the arrows into the ground at this point?
I guess.
Yeah.
But it, like he only did it 3 times. So it's
I imagine it, that being so awkward. Just being like, am I doing it right? You didn't really give me a lot of direction.
Well, last
here.
Time he was like holding his hand or, you know, like.
Yeah, he was like kind of directing him,
it.
Yeah.
But now it's like you're on your own. Fucked it up. Only 3 times.
So then Elisha dies. We get just a couple more kings. We just go through several generations. Basically.
Yeah, we blow through them pretty quick.
Some
yeah,
are good, some are bad. Some have military victories, some have military losses, but
some are more evil than their fathers, some are
yeah,
less evil
some are
than
less
their fathers.
Evil.
It's really just a spectrum.
One of them like rips mm-hmm. open pregnant women. Anyway, all these kings, even the good ones, like never take down like the high places,
right.
the golden calves.
Can't get rid
so,
of those calves.
So at some point we get to a part where this Assyrian king named Shalmaneser captures Samaria, which is the capital of Israel,
mm-hmm.
and deports the Israelites to Assyria and brings Assyrians in to settle Samaria.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the first Babylonian exile?
I believe so, yes.
And they do have a problem, though, because all the Assyrians in Samaria keep getting eaten by lions.
And that's because they don't know the rules about how to worship the local god,
yeah,
in this case, the Israelite god.
He's like, okay, we got to take care of this lion problem. Clearly, like, we need to give some sacrifices to the god of this land
mm-hmm.
instead of just our stupid god.
They could just import
doesn't
some
have any power here.
Import some Assyrian she-bears to take care of the lion problem. Of course, then you have a she-bear problem.
Right. And that might also already be a problem.
It's, I mean, they just need the books.
They do have people worship God,
mm-hmm.
but they're also still worshiping all their idols.
Yeah, which I assume is just a task they hand out to some people. It's like, all right, okay, whatever. If your ID number ends in a 3, you're worshiping this new god.
Yeah,
now.
You got to get some flawless calves, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, wring a dove's neck and hold it over water or
mm-hmm.
something.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Hezekiah, the king of Judah, and he's a good king, and he's getting rid of all the altars, including, shout out to the bronze snakes that Moses made back in, like, Numbers.
Yep.
That was my rating for that episode. I rated the Bible out of bronze snakes. And apparently people started worshiping them. So you cannot keep these Israelites.
You can't make anything.
Focused on one God. Like, yeah, any image they see.
Even like a place that's slightly higher than all the other places around it, they're like, ooh, love to worship.
Love to worship the sky.
There's a forest. I might go out in the forest. There's a hill.
You think about like Judaism as like, maybe not the first because there's Zoroastrianism first, but like one of the first monotheistic religions.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gone hundreds of years following the Israelites,
mm-hmm.
and they've been very bad at monotheism.
Mm-hmm. Very bad at it.
Like polytheism is so entrenched in society at this point that that's like what they're all used to for generations, mm-hmm. even though they're supposed to be only worshiping one God, and that's like their defining trait as like a group,
mm-hmm.
and as a society. It doesn't matter. They're still worshiping Baal and Asherah.
And because of that, they're just barely hanging on in there.
And they're barely hanging in there. But it's so tempting. It's like you see that bronze snake and you're like, oh,
Some say it's not even a lifestyle choice.
They were born that way. They were born polytheistic. So Hezekiah is like rebelling. He's not paying tribute to the Assyrian king.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Assyrian king's like, look, don't start with me or it's going to be bad for you. You're going to end up eating your own shit and drinking your own piss. And you're going to like have to eat your children. Remember what happened last famine?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
And so then Hezekiah like consults this new prophet, Isaiah. And Isaiah's like, nah, go for it. God's on your side.
It's fine. You won't be eating your poop.
And Isaiah has like a poem that he recites, mm-hmm. Where God reads Assyria for filth, basically. And then God has an angel kill 185,000 Assyrian soldiers in their sleep.
It's a good start.
No big deal.
And he doesn't kill all of them. He just kills that's just like half the soldiers.
There's always a number.
So then like the other half wake up and they're like, oh my God, everybody's dead.
165. Then like the king's sons murder him or something like that.
Yeah,
happens all the time though.
That's just so normal.
Yeah, he eventually gets killed. So then we have...
Why would anyone keep having kids at this point? If you're a king, like all your kids are going to do is kill you.
Well, it's set us up from the very beginning to tell us the kids are bad. They're just going to mock you.
They should have kept some she-bears,
yeah.
In the palace for this purpose. So then, yeah, he gets in trouble eventually, even though he's overall good and he gets killed. Then we have Manasseh and he just fucks up left and right. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, you took down that Asherah pole? I'm going to put it back up.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm going to throw up some new poles, too, to some gods we haven't talked about before.
And I'm going to put them in God's temple. How do you like that? And God's like, I don't. And I'm going to wipe out Jerusalem as one wipes a dish. Love that image.
Filthy dish.
God, like, with his yellow rubber gloves on, he's like, you're gone.
Well, he's been at the kitchen window. The whole time watching.
Mm-hmm. Just smoking over the sink.
Yeah. Just angry.
So then we get a couple more kings. This is Book of Kings.
Yeah.
I wrote down like Josiah becomes king after everyone kills everyone.
Yeah, that's a good,
that was like my
that's
only
a good
way.
Summary. Yeah. And then Josiah's having the temple, rebuilt and mm-hmm. repaired.
Oh, this is good.
Because it's been full of, right now it's full of idols that, Manasseh put there. And also earlier, people were selling off parts to pay tribute to kings.
Mm-hmm.
So, to pay tribute
they
to,
just built this damn temple.
Assyrian.
Come on.
I know.
Keep it together for a little while.
I know. So this priest is in there repairing it, and he finds, quote, the Book of the Law.
Thank God.
I hope behind a hidden wall or something. If it was just sitting out in open, they had no excuse.
And Josiah tears his robes because that's what people do when they're upset.
Oh no!
And he's like, oh, we should have been following this the whole time.
There's even a part in here where it says specifically, have the king read this book every
day.
Oh my God.
So then he's like, okay, we are changing things around here. We are going to celebrate Passover again.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to tear down all the idols. We're going to slaughter all the priests.
Did you imagine this as like a sped up like 90s montage?
It's like, oh, we got work to do. Roll up the sleeves. Yeah.
Yeah. It would be like some really great song over it.
Josiah's trying on outfits and the priests are like, nope.
And like tearing so down those poles.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That one. Yeah. All right.
So, oh, there's a prophetess in there too.
Oh, thank God. Finally.
Named Holda.
Holda.
Beautiful name.
Beautiful name. A beautiful name for a beautiful prophetess.
Her role is to tell Josiah that, like, yeah, God is going to punish Jerusalem for ignoring this book, but since you were a good king, we'll wait till after you die.
Right. The fourth generation afterwards or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
You think it's because he found the book, really? Like, it's more like, well, since you found it, it's okay.
Yeah, at least you did your part.
He's getting points for effort.
Yeah.
You know?
Which I like the idea that, like, this happens actually to a couple kings in this book who are good. It's like punishment will be delayed.
Mm-hmm.
I just really like the idea that, like, that's your reward, is that, like, you'll die before all the bad shit happens.
Yeah.
That's all that I hope for in terms of, like, global warming.
Yeah.
I'm just like,
that would be a blessing.
Yeah. So
not to go through the water riots and the dust storms and the tidal waves and stuff.
Yeah. So I think that's a practical reward to give to people.
One thing I learned from this book.
If you die before shit goes down, consider yourself lucky.
And do not worship other gods.
Yeah,
really don't.
Well, we learned that lesson fucking 50 times per book, and it never sinks in. So Josiah ends up dying in battle against Pharaoh Necho.
Who?
Mm-hmm.
What is his name?
Pharaoh Necho.
You spell it wrong, though. It's okay.
It's actually spelled like Necho. He is
like
actually
the wafers that bear his name.
I was going to say he's a cat. Mm. He's a Japanese cat that somehow made it over to Egypt. Egyptians loved cats. They just crowned him.
Good point.
Josiah dies.
Oh, but there were no kings like him before or after, our narrator said.
Oh, good for him.
Which is like, there probably were.
I mean, like, we had David and
Nobody
Solomon
lives
and
up to David.
David and Solomon, yeah. They're pretty good.
Yeah. But I guess, like, no king that fucked up that royally for that long suddenly changed like, everything.
Changed course that dramatically. Yeah.
Wasn't one like that.
And then, so his son takes over, but, like, his son is beholden to Pharaoh Necho.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically we end with a bunch of kings from surrounding areas, including the first Nebuchadnezzar, which is a name we're going to see again.
Mm-hmm.
They all gang up and attack Judah, and God is cool with this because it's their punishment that they're receiving after Josiah dies.
Even though they just got on the right course again.
But they forgot that book for too long.
Yep.
You can't.
I'm so interested in, like, what book were they following this whole time?
It was just they reverted to, like, an oral tradition.
They were,
like,
illiterate.
They had the book right there. It was in the temple the whole time.
They were like, words? What are these? Funny.
So, anyway, Nebuchadnezzar.
It's a weird painting.
Look at all these little marks on this page. Nebuchadnezzar exiles a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's, like, the second Babylonian exile. And then there's a few more generations, and then I don't know if it's the same Nebuchadnezzar or his son, but he takes Jerusalem, which is a big deal. The city of Jerusalem had not been taken before. So he takes Jerusalem, he destroys the temple, takes all the silver and gold inside that was making, like, you know, lamps and, like, 15-foot-tall cherubim statues.
Mm-hmm.
And he exiles some more Israelites to Babylon. And so that is where we leave off.
It's like a very post-apocalyptic finish.
Yeah. Deep in the Babylonian exile.
Cliffhanger.
Things are, like, just in ruins, basically.
Things are bad, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's just all, like, sort of, everything seems to be ramping up to that. It's like, well, all these bad kings, just, that's what happens.
Yeah, it's just after enough time, you can't escape the consequences
anymore.
It
adds up. God notes everything.
Yeah.
Every single minor detail.
Yeah, and he remembers.
Forever.
He fucking remembers.
Yeah.
So that's the end of 2 Kings.
Mm-hmm.
Necho, did you have any, what'd you think?
This one had a little bit more, like, overarching narrative than 1 Kings.
Uh-huh.
Mainly because it feels like there was a the stakes were a little higher. There was a little more gambit, you know, because like they just kept messing up and kept messing up and kept messing up. And then they like lost the promised land.
Uh-huh.
Like that's how badly they messed up.
Uh-huh.
So I like the way that that was carried out. In First Kings, I feel like there was a lot of screwing up and a lot of menace, but without a lot of follow through.
Mm-hmm. There was also like random chapters in First Kings that like didn't have to do with the main narrative. So
definitely.
Yeah. Garrod, what did you think?
I just felt like I felt kind of sorry for all these kings.
It like, it's a shitty life to be born into.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like, okay, now I'm 7 years old and I have to rule. And like, you know, they were maybe the young ones were the luckiest ones, it seemed like.
Yeah.
But people that, you know, had been in royal families for a while, like it seemed like it just, you were bound to screw up.
Yeah.
There's nothing like, you could do.
Always getting assassinated or held for ransom.
Yeah, for sure. The first thing you would have to do as a 7-year-old king is get your servants to kill all your brothers and uncles.
And you would just feel so drawn to those idols. Like, just like every day, like,
Yeah, and if you fuck up with the idols, then like you're bringing God's wrath down upon your whole kingdom.
Mm. And how the fuck are you ever supposed to get rid of those high places?
I don't even know.
They seem virtually impossible to destroy.
And the poles,
aren't they just high places? Like, how are you supposed to get rid of them?
It's like the mountains. You have to like level the mountains.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting to think about from the perspective of like the political purpose of this book, like when it was written about like, hey guys, this is our society. Our rules are you follow one god, you do not follow nature, and like you do not follow pagan gods. Here's what'll happen if you do.
Mm-hmm. Don't touch the shiny things.
Yeah.
Don't you dare.
Yeah. Don't even look at a bronze snake.
And I know it's like really tempting to just like sculpt or like mold one of those calves. Like I just feel like
sure,
listeners, you can't see, but Garrod is doing a very elegant sculpting motion.
I feel like I'm also like stroking the haunch of like some calf.
Or like a cat. He's kind of like doing like an evil.
It's like, sure, we've all melted down hundreds of pounds of gold and then felt the temptation to mold them into a cat.
Yeah.
Right. It's hot.
Literally.
Yeah.
It's molten. Molten hot.
I just, just want to stay away from that. A few simple rules, but they seem to be impossible to follow.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably because they didn't have them written down.
Exactly.
Well, they had them written down, but they forgot about them, yeah.
No libraries.
Yeah, the importance of books. Everyone...
treasure your local library.
Treasure your local library.
Treasure your local library.
Buy something from your local bookstore, your local indie. Buy
Don't
Garrod's
buy a Bible,
memoir.
Though.
Speaking of books, I think it is time to rate this book.
Yes. Lauren, how would you rate this book?
I am going to give it 5 out of 8 expensive donkey heads.
Oh, no.
I mean, I loved, like, there was so much action. There was so much plot.
I love donkey heads.
That's my favorite food. I know it's not technically kosher, but like when you pay 80 shekels of silver for something, like you just enjoy it more.
It just tastes better.
Yeah, it just tastes better. But yeah, so I loved all the action. You know, I'm not like a huge fan of super gory violence and like fetuses being ripped out of pregnant women, but it is at least interesting. And There was a lot of pathos for some of these kings where you're like, yeah, you're trying your best, you know, but you can't quite get rid of those high places. You know, I've been there in my own life.
We all have high places we'd like to tear down in our own lives that we just can't quite seem to do, even though we know we should.
Yeah. So overall pretty good. Still, you know, a little confusing and a little boring in some parts. And I don't want to like reward them too much for the disturbing graphic violence and cannibalism of children.
Okay.
So, you know, I got to take a star off for that. I mean, a donkey head. So, 5 out of 8 donkey heads.
5 out of 8 donkey heads. Which kind of donkey heads?
Very expensive ones. Yeah.
The best kind.
Nico.
Yes.
What would you rate this book?
I think I'm going to give it 8 out of 12 she-bears.
Okay.
For a lot of the reasons you said, I especially enjoyed the small moments of humanity in among this like long and violent history, like when that guy dropped his axe head into the water and Jezebel putting on her makeup before being defenestrated. It also checked in with some characters that I like. I liked Elisha was basically indistinguishable from Elijah for me, and I liked all of Elijah's
but it was
stuff.
Great, yeah.
So Jezebel got to see how that ended.
Beautifully.
Beautifully. It does paint kind of a bleak picture of being a king in Israel.
Yeah.
Which is just like you're born into violence and you die
yeah.
from it. And like I said, I like the scale of it a little bit better, that something was actually on the line for the Israelites this time, mm-hmm. for all of their various transgressions.
In creative writing workshops, we call that stakes.
They were raised up to the high places.
Yeah.
It's about enough of that.
Raise the stakes.
So that's how it shakes out for me. 8 out of 12 she-bears.
All right. Garrett, how would you rate this book?
I think I'd say 5 out of 7 battlefield abortions.
Oh, wow. That's the fetus is being ripped out of the pregnant mother's.
Yeah, it is.
That's a pretty high rating.
I know, actually. I feel like it's a controversial rating.
Yeah, and the unit is also a bit controversial.
True. Yeah, well, I wanted to go together, you know. I felt like I really liked the organization of this in some strange way. I've always loved structure, another workshop term. and I like that it's just like kings. Just like a constant flood of kings. And I felt like I could just...
It's just like kings. Man.
I felt like I could just like make a chart of like every attribute of all these kings and just sort of like find patterns.
A lot of them are strong from what I read.
Yeah, it's true. But then some of them can't even lift Jezebel. So
a single Jezebel. I can't lift a single Jezebel.
I don't know how many I could lift.
Do you know how many
older.
Jezebels you can bench press?
She was kind of older. So maybe...
It's just probably kind of frail. I don't know.
Are you just imagining that? Because she's a woman.
You're right. I'm just going by stereotypes of women who paint their eyes and arrange their hair.
How many cubits do you think she was?
Stare out of windows.
I don't know. How much is a cubit? Oh, it's 2 liters, right?
That's horrible.
Isn't it?
No.
Oh.
A cubit is a measure of distance.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
It's the distance from your shoulder to your... Elbow.
Your elbow to your fingertip.
Elbow
Those
to your
aren't
fingertip.
Important body parts. Well, the fingertips are.
The elbow we've established.
Sorry, we've completely derailed your rating.
Sorry.
No,
I did too.
To
I did it to myself too. I'm also, I mean, this always works on me. There were a few showstoppers in here that blinded me, I believe. One is the she-bears, obviously.
All-time classic Bible stuff.
Yeah. There. Jezebel's makeup scene was like filmic and beautiful, mm-hmm. and I wanted to see somebody do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think I was like, this makes me understand things like Lord of the Rings better, like all mm-hmm. those like histories of mm-hmm. kings and stuff. It was helpful for me, I think, as a human, as a scholar,
and as a devoted Christian. all right, so that's our show.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett, where can people find you?
Well, oh my gosh, in the future. I'm on tour right now.
So on the internet.
Oh, the internet's always the future.
If people wanted to stalk you, could you facilitate that?
Describe some of your patterns.
I don't even know if I'm going to be live after reading Second Kings. Like, I'm going to do something bad.
Let's just work with the assumption that you will
like on the
internet. Let's work with the assumption that you're going to be alive for a little bit longer.
It's impossible to spell my name, so... Like, if I say my website name, it'll be like...
Well, just spell it.
Okay. It's GarrettConley.com, and that is GarrardConley.
There's a silent R in
there's
Garrett.
There's a crazy silent R.
I'll also put the name in the episode description.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're on Twitter at...
GayRodCon.
Does that mean you're, like, the A-Rod of being gay?
Yes.
Awesome.
Also, it's, like, a more... correct pronunciation of my name. Gayrod.
You know. Gayrod.
Gayrod. GayRodCon.
Gayrod Con. We are also on Twitter
mm-hmm.
at SunschoolDrop. And we also have a website, SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
Mm-hmm. SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
We're on Facebook. You can just search for Sunday School Dropouts.
You can send us email at contact@SundaySchoolDropouts.lol. If you have questions or concerns, keep them to yourself. No, lay them on us.
If they're about foreskins, we don't want to hear it.
Probably not.
They're going to be about eunuchs. Don't.
But everything else, yeah.
We want to thank Elise Carlton for our logo and our art.
And we want to thank Nico for all of our sound production and our music.
You're welcome. If you, out there want to help other people find the show, other cool people, that is. We don't want any squares.
Diluting our brand.
It's the only thing we own. The best way to do that is to leave a rating and review for us on the iTunes store. If you go to the iTunes store, if you're not a Mac user, it doesn't matter. Just you can go to the iTunes store, find the show, possibly by searching the name, and
just,
leave.
Just give us a little rating, you know, give us 5 out of 5 bronze snakes or whatever.
If you want to, you can, that's an example of a rating that you could give. We would love to hear from you if you have any comments, positive or otherwise. Also, I have nothing else to say, but
we love you very much.
I love you.
As always, we love you very much.
And we will see you on Sunday.
We will see you on Sunday.
Bye.
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 Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.